This is side two of a conversation with Hugh Alexander on January the 28th. Okay, it's on now.
I remember when the scouts first started being hired in baseball. I'd already scouted 7-8 years by then. It was 1947, and you could start seeing the scouts appear on the horizon then. You know, minor league managers ended up being more scouts then. And I told you this before, when I started scouting, there was 23 scouts in baseball. But in 47, I could see it coming. Well, I couldn't see it coming. I could actually see it because here was some guy come up and said, my name is so-and-so, and I'm scouting now for so-and-so club. Okay. Now they started to put the rules in baseball in the scouting, the bonus rules and different things in 48. Okay, as it got progressively worse, so to speak, with more rules attached, some of the older people, maybe they were minor league players, minor league managers, but they were up in age, and then scouted then 3 or 4 or 5 or 6 years. And I'd be talking to them, and they'd say, or we'd be talking in a room, we're at the ballpark. I'm not going to change my philosophy of scouting, they would put up. And I'd say, hey, you're 60 years old. You have to change your philosophy because the rules are going to be in this game from now on. They're going to have bonus rules of some kind. They'll finally end up with a draft at 65. Yeah. And the old scouts, some of the older, but not me, even though I scouted a long time, I was still young, they would say, I'm not going to change my philosophy. And they failed. They failed. Those guys failed because they didn't change with the time, so to speak.
And they thought they were right.
They thought they were right in the old way of scouting, and you can't. You have to change with the times. It's like, I don't think I could be a very good scout today with a draft. I think I'd get frustrated. Maybe that's the wrong word. I couldn't do it for one reason, because I scouted. It wouldn't bother me on the evaluation of a player. It would bother me that I couldn't get the good player. He wasn't available.
That's right.
I'm working for a club that's going to draft number 22, and he goes before we draft.
That's right. You never know what's going to be left when time 22 comes
in. So I've scouted this ball player since he's 15 years old. I know him. I know his family. I know everything about this kid. I know he's going to be a great ball player in the big league. And I don't have a chance to get the ball player. I don't have a chance. And it would frustrate me. It really would.
Yeah, frustrate anybody.
Well, some scouts, they take it. They just
kind of take it impersonal and say, hey.
Nothing I can do about it. I had him in for the draft, and I didn't get him. Right? But
I wouldn't
do that. That would bother me. Mm-hmm. That would really bother me.
So your role today is special player consultant
right.
with the Chicago Cubs.
Right.
What in Sam Hill does a special player consultant do? Think about trades during the offseason?
That's all. That's exactly what it comes down to. There's nothing else. It's I do not scout free agent ball players. I mean, like high school or college ball players, I don't do it. I haven't done it in 21 years. I scout in the major leagues all the time. And I try to set up trades. I stay in constant touch with the general manager, whoever it is. This year is Larry Hines. I know Larry Hines real well. He and I have already had a talk about it. Everything that I uncover in the Texas Ranger ballpark, I'm in Texas Rangers, wherever I am, Houston or Atlanta, I don't make it where I am. I go to the general manager of that ball club, sit down with him 15 minutes, 20 minutes, 30 minutes, whatever it takes. I find out who's available off his club. Because I ask him point blank. Dan, you're the general manager of the Cincinnati ball club. I go in your office before the game. We sit down and talk, whether it's the first day or second day I'm in town. Because I can always get in the offices of those general managers, because I know them all.
Yeah.
And I say, in spring training, I'll do the same thing. Who's available off your club? And he'll say, you'll say, I've got so-and-so available, I've got this player available. He'll have 3 or 4 players available. Not the great ones, but he'll have 3 or 4 players available. And I'll say, we are looking for pitching. And you might say, I don't have any pitching available. I don't have any. Well, that takes care of it right there.
Mm-hmm.
Takes care of that right there. So the next day, I talk to the general manager, and I say, okay, I just talked to Dan Austin, and he knows what I'm talking about. And they don't have any pitching available at all. None. So that eliminates you for the time being.
Mm-hmm.
I'll be back in touch with you later on, but that eliminates you and I right real quick. Now I'm trying to figure
is
out.
Is that businesslike and frank?
Right.
Among the GMs?
Is what?
Is it that frank and that businesslike among the GMs? You say, oh, don't have anybody? Okay, I'll talk to you later.
It's just that simple.
It's just that simple.
It really is.
No window dressing.
None whatsoever. There's a few young general managers try it, but it doesn't work.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, it's very, what I do, and I've really been successful at it, not that I'm trying to brag or anything. I've really
well, please brag.
Is I put everything right on top of the table. I put it right on top of the table. When they say to me, would you have interest in moving? I'll just pick out Dwight Smith.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we'll move Dwight
mm-hmm.
Smith. What do you take for him? I don't know. We're looking for pitching. You know, or would you move Viscano? Or would you move Sanchez? That's my young mm-hmm. infielder. Yeah, we'll talk about it. Okay, that starts the ball rolling. I do not go by the way of left field on anybody. I don't care who it is. I do not go by the way of left field. I'm not going to do it. I made up my mind 21 years ago I would not do that. I would not put any bull out
mm-hmm.
or wind address it like you said a minute ago or go by the way of left field.
Okay, let me ask you this. You're talking to the GM of Cincinnati or whoever, Atlanta, and you want a left-handed pitcher. I haven't met a scout yet that doesn't have an obsession with left-handed pitchers.
I like left-handed pitchers myself.
maybe it's because of the layout of the diamond, but I haven't met a manager or coach yet that says, give me a left-handed pitcher.
One of the things is they can hold runners on first base a lot better.
That's true, yeah.
I mean, that's one of the points.
Yeah. Clark Gifford said that, give me all left-handed pitchers and all right-handed hitters, and I'll beat you to death.
And he's right. He's right. He's right. Sure will. Last spring, I don't know whether you and I touched on this last time or not, last spring, the Phillies were interested in Mitch Williams.
Mm-hmm.
And we were going to move Mitch Williams, you know, because he'd had his 2 years in Chicago. And Mitch Williams is one of those pitchers that he ain't going to stay about 2 or 3 years in the same city, because if you finally get tired of all that wildness that he comes up with, but... Because he'll drive, he'll put, what my saying is, he'll put that manager on the top step of the dugout. When he's pitching, that manager will be right up on the top step. He won't be back on that third step. He'll be on the top step, ready to run out to get him out of that ballgame.
Lefties have control problems.
Right, and he's really got them, but
yeah.
The Phillies wanted him. The first pitcher I asked for and got was McElroy, the young pitcher mm-hmm. that pitched last year for the Cubs. He did a hell of a job in 71 ballgame. And they agreed. They would trade McElroy. I don't think they knew as much about McElroy as I did.
What did you know about him?
Well, he was signed by the Phillies originally when I was still there, the last year I was there, and I knew that kid.
Oh,
and
really?
I knew the scout that signed him down in Texas, too. And I knew all about that kid. Not that I'm trying to brag or anything on that, or knew more than anybody else. But anyway, I said, okay, we're interested. But there's got to be another ball player involved. And they said, yeah, we understand. And I said, well, I'm not going to trade you Mitch Williams, who just the year before, 2 years before that saved 36 ball games for the Cubs and pitched them right into mm-hmm. pennant in 89. I said, we're not going to do that. We have to have another young ball player of some kind. It took 28 days, you know that? I was over at that ballpark every morning at Clearwater. Wherever I was going, if I was going to Bradenton or Sarasota or Plant mm-hmm. City or Dunedin, wherever I was going, or St. Pete, I would go by that ballpark at about 9 o'clock every morning because I know Bill Giles is going to be mm-hmm. there and Lee Thomas, unless they went on the road with the club. But most of the mornings I was by there, and I'd say, okay, give us so-and-so player along with McElroy, and we'll trade.
Mm-hmm.
Now we can't give up that player. That's okay. So it took about 28 days, and finally... I said, I'll take Scanlon, the big right-handed mm-hmm. pitcher. And they said, okay, yeah, we'll make that deal.
Mm-hmm.
We'll make that deal that last day. And McElroy did a good job, and Scanlon did a pretty good job. Scanlon's going to make a good pitcher,
mm-hmm.
6'7" pitcher. But anyway, it was time-consuming. I remember having a meeting.
Anything good is time-consuming.
I remember having a meeting with the writers, because all the writers... They know that when I walk in a ballpark, something's going on. Something's going on. I don't go into a ballpark just to fool around or watch a damn baseball game.
Mm-hmm.
When I come into a city, I'm in there for a purpose. And all the writers in baseball know it. And every morning they'd be waiting for me, and they'd write the stories. They were all guessing. Mm-hmm. And I had a meeting with them one morning, about the 20th morning or something along. And I said, hey, you guys, all of you, are doing me the worst thing that's happening to this trade are you guys. You're writing something in the paper every day. It goes out in the Associated Press. And I said, you guys are guessing on this deal. And what you're going to do, all of you want, Mitch Williams. These are Philly writers. You know, the Phillies, they got about 10 or 12 writers.
Yeah.
They got a bunch of them. And I said, you guys are going to mess all this whole deal up. It's going to fall through if you don't quit guessing in the paper. If you don't quit that guessing, because that's what you're doing. You're not getting it from me. You're guessing of what's going on. And if you keep on, you're going to throw the monkey wrench right in the gears, and it'll all break, and it'll all be over with. So just keep your damn mouth shut for a few days and let Uncle Hugh complete this damn deal.
Mm-hmm.
But I said it's in the paper every morning, and it was
all
over the country. You know, so they finally made it.
They laid off, and you got the deal.
And they did lay off.
Mm-hmm. 2 months ago, and of course this was before the Miami confab, you were thinking about Mark Grace and trading him to the Royals for Saberhagen, I think, or with somebody else?
No, we wanted Apier and Gordon. We were trying to come up with a deal where we'd get those two young pitchers.
And that fell through?
It fell through, but it fell through when they signed Joyner.
Yeah.
When I went into Kansas City in August, late in August, I went in there for a purpose. I really did. I know Herc Robinson, real well knew him, was at Cincinnati, and then, of course, he did. Come over to Kansas City, then he got with Cheryl's left, then he got to be the general manager. So the first day I see him before the game, and I said, when can you and I get together? I need to talk to you. And he said, how about tomorrow at 4 o'clock? He said, can you come out to ballpark early? I said, damn it, across the highway from the hotel. I said, I'll be here at 4 o'clock. So the next day I had a rental car, and I get out early. Go up in your office, and he's sitting there along with Joe Klein and Art Stewart, all three people. And he said, what's on your mind, Uncle Hugh? And I said, we're looking for pitching, and you got pitching. I said, the one strong point you got is pitching. He said, that's right. He said, you're looking for pitchers? Pitching? I'll trade any pitcher on this club. And I looked right at him, and he got on through, and I said, Herc, do me a favor. He said, okay. I said, repeat just what you got through saying, so I'll be sure I understand what you said. He said, okay. He said, I'll trade any pitcher on this club. I said, Saberhagen? He said, I'll trade Saberhagen. So he was right back in August, right?
Yeah, that's right.
I mean, he was truthful. Yeah, I'll trade Saberhagen, but he'll come high. And he said, then I started naming off the pitcher. I said, Mark Davis? He said, yeah. I said, Storm Davis? He said, yeah. I said, Boddicker? Yeah. Apier? Well, we don't want to trade Apier, but we would.
Mm-hmm.
I said, Gordon? Yeah. Montgomery? I named all the pitchers off, because I could name all those ball pitchers off without even looking at the book. But anyway, I said, we're interested. What are you looking for? He said, we're looking for a good hitter, somebody can hit the ball.
Mm-hmm.
We lack hitting and we need hitting. I said, well, I said, that's going to be a little tough for us. I said, we can't trade George Bell. We can't trade Andre Dawson. We can't trade Sandberg. We can't trade
Why can't you trade Dawson? He's, what, 36?
Nobody wanted him.
Oh, okay. Comes too high.
Yeah. So at that particular time, then, Herc Robinson spoke up and he said, what about Mark Grace? I said, I don't know, it'd be tough to trade a young hitter like Mark Grace, but we'd have to think about it. But if we did think about Mark Grace, we do not have a first baseman in the whole organization outside of one named Polino, who's down in the lower leagues,
uh-huh.
But we don't have a first baseman right now. If we traded Mark Grace, we'd have to play Villanueva or somebody at first, because we do not have a first baseman. And then all at once I said, but if we were interested, you would have to put Benzinger in the deal. And they said, well, that's no problem. We can do that. Mm-hmm. I said, okay, then we can talk. I said, who else would you have interested? They said, Jerome Walton. I said, okay. I said, we'll talk. So we really started talking from that day on, Jim Fry and I.
Mm-hmm.
And we kept it up, and talked to the Kansas City Club once or twice, three times a week, and then got into the deal in Chicago where we changed general managers, and mm-hmm. we were kind of at a standstill. At the World Series, Kansas City Club came to me and they said, are you still interested in talking about that deal? I said, we'll talk about it right now. We'll go over to that table, over to sit down, and we'll talk about it. But we can't do anything right now because we're in limbo right now until we get a new, get a general manager or president of the club or somebody. We can't do anything, but we'll talk. So we talked about it. So then we get a new general manager. We go into Miami Beach, and they sign Joyner. As soon as they signed Joyner, I was in the lobby. As soon as I heard it, I said, well,
that's it, that's it. They got the first baseman.
They got the big first baseman.
Yeah. Huey, I'd like to turn to something about baseball's future.
Okay.
Now, you told me about how you have bridged a couple of major changes in scouting and over the years, but I'd like to take out the crystal ball and take a look at, well, let's say the rest of this decade up until 2000 AD. And certainly one of them has to be the labor problems, collective bargaining. You know, it's not new. I remember as a kid that when Mickey Owen and a few others went down the Mexican League and they were barred from baseball.
Sure were.
And, you know, it took a while to get, I don't know if all of them got reinstated or not. Mickey Owens did. I remember
Mickey
that.
Did. Most of them did.
Yeah. So it's not new. We might think of it new because the union now. Do you see, and this, of course, is coupled with TV revenues and contracts and all of that, more stability and negotiations between management and the ballplayers, or a continuation of what we've seen the past 10, 15 years?
Well, I thought sure this past year or so, Dan, that we could curtail some of the big salaries, but it doesn't look like we will. The other day we gave Maddox, our young pitcher, $4.2 million for 1 year, right?
Mm-hmm.
He was going to go to arbitration at $4.4 million, so we signed him for 1 year for $4.2. We're just prolonging that thing.
Yeah. So you're kind of renting ballplayers for a year.
We kind of rented him for a year. What they'll try to do is they'll try to sign him to a long-term contract, 3 or 4 or 5 years, and the money will be high. So he's going to end up making $4.2 million this year, right? Next year he'll be at close to $5 million, right?
Right.
Now what's going to happen when we sign Sandberg? Next year Sandberg will be the highest paid ballplayer in baseball. Next year, I mean, in 93, Sandberg will be the highest paid ballplayer in baseball. You can take it to the bank. He'll be the highest paid ball player in baseball. He'll be probably a $6 million player. Biggest cinch I've ever seen for one reason. The other day, Cincinnati signed Larkin. Mm-hmm. I'm not taking anything away from Larkin. He is some kind of a ball player. They signed him for $5.1 million for 5 years, didn't they? What, $5 million? Put his stats up beside of Sandberg and see where you are. Just put him up there. He has 20 home runs a year, Larkin, right?
Mm-hmm.
Sandberg is 40. Sandberg is just as good a fielder as Larkin. He steals just as many bases. They steal about 25 or 30 apiece, right?
But you can say that, but it has to be put in the context of and I put this in the context of the end of next year. I think the whole Oakland A's team could be free agents.
Sandberg will be a free agent.
Sandberg will be a free agent. And you got at the same time renegotiation of the TV contract with CBS or whoever's going to get it.
In 1984, the Cubs.
And so that doesn't mean they're saying that these guys are going to be the biggest money. There's going to be a flood on the market, and the owners will say.
I counted up the other day on the ballplayers that are going to be free agents at the end of the 92 season.
Mm-hmm.
There's 22 real good ones. And I'm talking about real good ones. I'm talking about superstars are going to be free agents. Now, I don't know whether this is going to hurt or help. It might help that you got that many. You know that?
That's what I'm thinking.
It might help.
Either that or make the owners greedier.
It might help. I mean, I'm not as smart as you are.
No, you are. You got.
No, I'm talking about business-wise and everything. But with 22, if you had six.
That's a different story.
That's a different story. If you had 22, the money can't get that high for 22 ballplayers.
I don't see how. When I look at the Oakland A's, and their payroll, annual payroll is $40 million now.
In 1984, the Cubs won the pennant under Jim Frank.
Mm-hmm.
And got beat in the playoff by San Diego. Yeah. Okay. That's before I went over from Philadelphia. Their payroll was $12 million. You know what it's going to be in 1992?
No.
It's going to be about $35 million.
For the Cubs? $35
million? Sure will. How about that? In other words, it went up 3-1 since 84. That's not very long ago.
Of course, they got the nationwide TV revenues, you know, WGN and their superstation.
Well, that's it. And that's what helped.
Well, that's the difference right there compared to Cincinnati or Pittsburgh or Kansas City.
Yankees can't lose. Yankees can't lose. I don't care what happens. I mean, they can lose playing ball,
but
they can't lose money-wise.
No, they got their local TV revenues.
Madison Square Garden for $50 million a year.
Yeah.
What was that, year before last when he signed a 10-year contract for $50 million a year with the cable with Madison Square Garden, right?
That's right. And they don't share that with anybody.
See? They don't share it with anybody. And then he gets the $14 million from the big league TV, and then he's got the radio and stuff in New York. So he's at $64 million. He's probably at $70 million on radio and TV, isn't he?
Mm-hmm.
Plus 2.5 million people a year. He can't lose. You know, we can lose. I'm losing money.
Yeah, losing money.
But some of the clubs.
But that can't continue. Looking at the future, that kind of inequity will destroy the draft system that came about in the mid-60s.
Well, here, give you a good example. One of them. There's several. Cleveland traded Swindell to the Cincinnati Club last fall, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because they couldn't sign him, or they didn't want to give him that kind of money.
Mm-hmm.
So he went over to Cincinnati. Well, clubs, what's going to happen to clubs like Cleveland, Seattle, Houston? What's going to happen to those ball clubs? They can't get in that market.
That's right.
They can't get in that market. It's too expensive. Am I right?
That's right. That's why I'm saying, looking at crystal ball, this cannot continue.
Look what's happening to Pittsburgh.
Pittsburgh's same way.
They lost Bonilla. They're going to pay it through the nose on Drabeck and Bonds both, or have to trade them. So they won two pennants in a row, and now they're going to falter. And unless they spend the money, and they don't have the money.
But they don't have the local TV revenues.
Right.
And, their contracts are saying, well, we'll pay all this money in the future.
Look what Toronto's doing right now. They're just signing ball players. They're signing any big ball player price. They're making it what it costs because they draw 4 million people a year.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what the TV rights are up in Canada. I don't have no idea. But look at poor old Montreal. Mm-hmm. They pull their horns in because they don't have any money.
So you really foresee a salary cap such as what is in the National Basketball League?
I don't think. Well, I don't know now. I'm just in my personal opinion. I don't think they can get the salary cap through the Player Association.
I don't think they will either.
They'll never get it through.
But
I don't know how basketball ever got it, but they did.
The only way I can see it is that the TV, national TV revenues are not going to be there. They're not going to get that kind of contract from any commercial broadcasting company.
I don't think so.
Unless they go to pay TV. And I see that the next Olympics in 4 years, and it wouldn't surprise me with the Super Bowl and the World Series and the playoffs in 4 years, is going to be all pay television.
You might be right. You might be right. I'm not disagreeing with you, but you might be right. You might have to be right. You might be forced.
Yeah, I think it's going to be forced.
Be forced.
To solve this inequity problem. Because I don't see the Yankees
right now,
or
baseball,
Chicago divvying up their local TV revenues to the other clubs.
No.
I don't think they're baseball that
generous. Baseball is worried right now. They're worried about that collective bargaining and that new agreement when it comes up. They're worried
and
about
that expires at the end of next year.
They're worried about that TV money is what they're worried about.
Yeah.
They're all getting $14 million a year right now out of that. $14
million. That's right. That's not going
to
happen.
What if it dropped to $7 million? That's $7 million right off the top, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
That hurt.
Well, you think they ought to give the commissioner more power in terms of collective bargaining?
Well, do you?
And the owners stay out of it.
You might be right. Something has to be done.
Well, you know more about baseball than I. You've forgotten more than I've ever learned, so well, I'd like to get you to...
I'm just a baseball person. I don't know a lot about the business end of it. I know some, but I don't know, you know. Some of those guys are really sharp people. Well, like yourself, you got a PhD. I mean,
I'm proud of it, but...
But you got some sense, and you got some intelligence. But we have some good baseball people that are very intelligent.
Shrewd minds.
Real shrewd. But I don't know whether I don't know if you put enough pressure on the ball players, the union, or the player association. Mm-hmm. You think I'm gonna ask you? You think baseball could put enough pressure on them to say, "Okay, you just broke us. Mm-hmm. You just broke us. Now, unless you let us put a salary cap on of some kind, or do something." You guys won't have a job because we cannot play like we're playing. We can't field a team out there for $50 million. We can't do it. We can't pay $50 million a year.
Well, you can do it with three or four teams that have national TV markets, but the rest of them can't survive.
They can't survive, can they?
So you have major leaguers playing minor leaguers. Superstars all on a few teams and the minor leaguers on the others.
See, that's one reason, and I know this for sure. I know this. Way back when they started putting the bonus rules in effect, back in the late 40s, mm-hmm. early 50s, and then in 65 they put the draft in. It was only put in for one reason. Because way back in the 40s and 50s and 60s, before the draft of 65, five or six, seven clubs got all the good players. Did you know that?
No.
We got all the good players. The little clubs didn't have a chance. Yeah, they had two chances, slim and none.
Yeah.
They could not. Here's a ball player that graduated. He's graduating from high school, or he's coming up as a junior in college. It don't matter who he is. There's 20 clubs involved with that ball player. I saw this happen hundreds of times, thousands of times. 20 clubs are in the running on this ball player. And here's what I used to do. One of the things I used to do. But you used to really tee off the other scouts, and I can see their point, but what the hell I was one of those aggressive guys. I'd go into your house. You got a son coming out of high school or college, whatever. And I'll say, tell you what I'm going to do. So why don't you keep the cheap clubs out of this? Because there's 20 clubs going to be in here trying to sign your boy. And some of these clubs are going to come in here at $8,000 or $10,000, $12,000, $15,000. And they're going to take up a whole evening of your time. So why don't we do this? I was the first scout to ever start this. Your boy is going to get a lot of money. So why don't I start the bidding? And you can use me. I'll give you permission to use me and the Dodgers. I'm going to make you a bona fide offer right now. It'll be the first offer. It will not be my last one. But I'm going to make you a bona fide offer right now. I'll give you $50,000 right now. That's the first offer. Now, when somebody calls you on the phone to set up an appointment to come out to your house and spend all evening, you'll say, well, I've already had a bona fide offer for $50,000. Now the scout's got to say one or two things. He's got to say, well, okay, we're interested for more than that, let's make an appointment. Or we're not going to be interested for that kind of money. So it would always come down to about five, six, seven clubs, like the Dodgers, the Yankees, the Red Sox, Baltimore. There was always about six, seven, eight would come in and run everybody out of the business. Yes. Just run them right out, and now it gets down to five, six clubs, and the bidding starts then, and pretty soon, within a day or two, somebody's got to stop. I mean, this club falls out, this one falls out. So...
But spend your time with the ones that are going to have the money.
What it was, then the clubs that didn't have the money, they squealed like a pig under a gate. And that's when they started putting the rules in, and that's when they come up with the draft, which is, it does benefit those clubs, except the last two or three years it got out of hand on that number one player. Mm-hmm. It really got out of hand. Well, for the last year, got $1.5 million, a high school boy. The year before, the guy over in Texas got $1.3 million. Now, the ball player, the number one ball player next year, this year, 92 in June, what's he going to ask for? He's going to ask for $2
million.
He'll ask for $2 million because the other guy just got $1.5 million. Yeah.
A little room for inflation and what I think I'm worth, and $2 million on the line.
Exactly. So that's why the rules but were put in. But again, what I'm trying to tell you, it's the same thing that's happening today. In the sense of the word, it's the same thing.
It's what happened with the bonus.
The same thing. Same identical thing, because the clubs, some of the clubs can't afford that kind of money, right? So they just have to back off. They backed off way back on the bonuses, right? For $50,000 and $100,000, they backed off, right? Like I said a minute ago, it came down to 5, 6, 7, 8 club. Same thing's going to happen now under this rule.
Money's different, but the same kind of game, same kind of maneuvering.
And those clubs will back off. They'll back off. They'll say, "Well, I can't take this ball player, or I can't trade for this ball player, or I've got this ball player and he's a high price. He's going to cost me $4 million. I got to trade him. I got to trade this ball player, right?"
Expansion. Been a little talk about not only within the United States, but in the Caribbean and the and in countries like Japan and Taiwan, Korea, and have a, three major leagues, one in the Pacific area, and then two in America, and maybe a fourth one in the Caribbean.
That'll be here. I don't know when. It'll be here.
It truly would be a World Series.
It'll be here. I don't know when. I don't know whether it'll be here in the year 2000 or not. I don't know. I can't foresee it that far in advance, but it'll be here. Mm-hmm. You take it to the bank, it will. If they put a big league club or two in Japan, right?
Mm-hmm.
Mexico City is the second largest city in the world. Did you know that?
Yeah, I've been there. I know it's huge.
Last time I was there, I asked the man at the hotel, I said, "How big is Mexico City?" He said, 15 million people. The city?
Yeah.
I said, "Boy, that is big." He said, "There's only one city larger, and that's Tokyo."
Mm-hmm.
And I did a little research later on and found out that Tokyo was about 17 or 18 million in Mexico City. What if you put a... When I go to Mexico City, I know times would change. There'd be different prices, right? Get in that ballpark. When I go to Mexico City and scout, they got two clubs in Mexico City, you know, the Reds and the Tigers, half a year's near.
Mm-hmm.
When you go to a ball game in Mexico City, there'll be 25,000 people in that ballpark every time they play a game, because the Mexican people love baseball. Well, Mexico City would be a cinch to be in the big leagues, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so would Tokyo. Now, what other countries, I don't know. But Caracas, Venezuela is almost the same thing. It must be 10 million people.
Yes.
And every time I go to Caracas, or used to, there'd be 25, 30,000 people in the ballpark.
And some fantastic ball players out of the rest of Central America, Nicaragua. Of course, they got to rebuild the country, but Panama.
So to go back to what you asked a while ago, it'll be here. Mm-hmm. Just a question of time. When, I don't know.
If I could conclude... wonderful conversation, Hugh, on a lighter note. When I first started doing this for the Hall of Fame, I was really, I thought, well, I'm just going to talk to these coaches and scouts and players and tell them some C stories, and baseball is full of it, unlike any other sport in
absolutely,
the business.
Absolutely.
And one thing I always heard about ball players, and when I used to play sandlot ball, I had my own superstitions. I would never touch the third base foul line or the first base foul line, or I had a certain way to break in my ball glove.
Most ball players have them.
And I used to call knock on wood, and I'd
pick up hairpins on the street.
Any come to your mind that are really outlandish, peculiar, or maybe you had one yourself that, by gosh, that's mighty important to me?
Well, I had several. I think the ball player back in my days were a lot worse, if I use the word worse, than they are now. The ball player today, he's a pretty good businessman, and he doesn't have too many superstitions. Yeah.
Well, Wade Boggs, I believe number 7 is mighty important to him.
Yeah. Some of them do, but most of them.
Well, let's go back to yesteryear then. The lesser knowns as well as the well-known, if you recall any.
Well, what I wouldn't do, I might have to go back to the bat rack, but I always, when I was the on-deck hitter, or leading on whatever one I'm going to hit. I got the bat I'm going to use, and I got two more. And I always had three bats that I'd swing. We didn't have those big heavy things they swing now.
Yeah, you know, with the rings on them.
Rings on all that deal. We had to, you had to take two or three bats and swing them.
Yeah.
And I would never go to the plate unless I had three bats. And just before I get to the home plate, I'd throw two of them back at you. Just, it was just a ritual.
Yeah.
And just before I'd hit, I would lean the bat up against my stomach, so to speak, or here, reach down, get a little dirt, spit on my hands. And that glove, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And just a little deed you go through.
A little ritual.
A little ritual, what it is.
To get prepared.
And 90% of the ball players back in my days had some kind of a deal. I traded for a ball player last year in September when I made the trade in Houston with Atlanta.
Mm-hmm.
And what I told you about another kid named Turk Wendell. He was a double A and triple A for Atlanta. And they wanted Balecki and they wanted Berryhill. So we traded. I ended up, when I saw John Sherrill in Houston, I waited for the Houston club to come in there knowing that he'd be with him, because it was only 7 days left in the season. Seven. And I said, "You still interested in Balecki and Berryhill?" He said, "Yeah, because even though they wouldn't be eligible for the playoffs, really, but they might help them in the last 7 days." He said, "We sure are." I said, "Well," I said, "we'll take a boy named Need and a boy named Wendell." He said, "I can't trade Need." He said, "I can't do it. He's too good a prospect." But he said, "And I don't want to trade Wendell." He said, "I'll give you Valdez and then he give me three or four other players' names." I said, "No." So on Friday, Saturday, we met again. I said, "Wendell," and named somebody else. He said, "No." So anyway, but on Sunday, he said, "Okay, I'll give you Valdez and Wendell both."
Mm-hmm.
I said, "You got it," because I'd already had the okay from Jim Fry. So we made the trade on Sunday. And the ball players then joined them Monday in Cincinnati. And they played, I mean, they're with them the last 6 days. Wendell is like Fidrich. Remember Fidrich?
Yes, Fidrich, the bird, Mark.
He is something. He will not, when he crosses the white line coming to the mound, he don't step over it. He jumps over it. He loves to jump 3 foot high. And when he starts each inning, he salutes the center fielder. And he chews licorice. Don't chew tobacco, he chews licorice. And he brushes his teeth between innings in the dugout.
Brushes his teeth?
He gets that black licorice off his teeth. And when the umpire throws him a ball, like the ball's fouled off, if the umpire throws him the ball, he lets the ball go right on by him to center field. He will not take a ball from the umpire. And you wait when he picks it in the big leagues in another year or so. Them umpires will break him the first game he plays.
I tell you, they'll have a little sermon ready for him in a hurry.
They'll have it ready for him. When they throw the first ball to him, you can take it.
Well,